We all tell ourselves stories of who we are and why. But we forget that we have the power to define them. That no idea grows from mewling striped cub to teeth at your throat tiger without a little help, some guidance, and a whole lot of love along the way. I'm Jared Cerf, and this is Here Be Tigers.
The other way, if you were going purely the locals on Fantasyland discover a thing has gone awry, perhaps it's the big change begins with the AI doing the thing that is noticeable.
Well, I think especially if you're going to go with the idea that the AI has subdivided itself.
Sure.
You start with one that has decided to do something incalculably stupid, like, again, execute a crime lord in his den.
And then walk off.
And you run that as a monster movie.
Yes.
And the players are the crime lord's minions.
And that'd be another way to do this kind of narrative in multiple forms would be to have bits and pieces of the story through the people who live around the moment where things change.
Which actually I think would be a lot of fun to run, tell you the truth. Sure. I would be very happy to be the guy running the game for all of the criminals versus a John Wick.
That is, in effect, just a bored robot. Has no actual revenge motive whatsoever.
It's decided that the crime lord needs to be brought down because he's a crime lord. It doesn't really understand. It just knows that bringing down crime lords is cool.
Right. That's the awesome thing. You get accolades, you get prizes.
Oh, I should fight all of the minions of this crime lord.
Right. It probably breaks into the mayor's office demanding his reward.
It depends on how you want to play it. I could actually see the thing trying to get the mayor to install a bat phone if you wanted to go like really silly with it. But I don't think you do. I don't think you bother with that. I think it literally just like emerges out of the docks some foggy night. And decides, you know what? Fuck these guys. And just goes.
And they can't find motive. They can't find, because it's probably...
There is no motive. Nobody knows why it's doing it. Nobody understands how it knows where all of their, you know, criminal operations are. It's just scything its way through this, you know, Renaissance-era criminal organization.
It's Scarlet Pimpernel, Batman, you know, Robot Terminator.
Oh, yeah. It almost certainly has, like, you know, a flashing red cape or something. So some idiotic, you know, sign to leave behind, of course. It understands the form, again, but not the function or the content.
Yes. Like, it might leave calling cards, but what's on them is gibberish.
Yeah.
Or if not gibberish, pure coding or languages they don't understand.
No, I think it probably leaves calling cards of, like, napkins from the spaceship with inspiring sayings on them.
Not just inspiring savings, quotes from the captain's monologues.
Right, right. Like it leaves behind a napkin that said, of all the world's surfaces, the islands are the aristocrats at the scene of like a warehouse where it's killed all of the smugglers. And the logo for the spaceship, and everybody's like, what?
I still can't, because the other day I was at Spotify running and the ad came back because I thought it was just a fever dream the day I told you.
Yeah, but no, it was real. Much like the Cooking with Dr. Seuss show that I, you know, fell asleep to and that I woke up to that one time during COVID. That's a real show, it turns out.
Why did we not have taxidermy with Dr. Seuss as a show?
That sounds like more fun, but...
I've seen his actual taxidermy. It's crazy.
Like I said, that sounds like more fun.
Yeah. Apparently his dad was a park ranger and would bring him parts to play with.
Oh, Lord. Okay. So anyway, you heard the ad again, and I think that's what you want. You want it leaving behind these like embroidered, that's the word, napkins.
The AI is going to go places it's never been before in more ways than one.
Right. It's going to leave behind, you know, embroidered spaceship napkins, which obviously any space characters in the crew will recognize, but there won't be any.
Well, and see, and that could be part of where, you know, the two moments meet where the locals have all been frothed up over this ridiculous, weird set of phenomenal beings doing things and not getting
The cops come back on the boat that went to investigate the island and start trying to figure out what links all these crimes and go, holy shit.
Well, and even better, they carry stuff with the branding from the ship on it.
Right. And they're like, wait a minute.
So they board, they've got, hey, we've got all this wonderful medical stuff, you know, from the magic temple, floating temple on the, you know, above the Isle of the Bull Wizard, forbidden, yada, yada. And they start handing out the, you know, the silica gel packets that seal minor wounds and other things like that, which of course gets the local temples mad, you know, that's their gig. And on all of them is the ship's branding, and the back is an inspirational feel-good statement going.
And that can be your fiasco game, because really I don't see what other game suffices to run a thugs versus Batman game from the point of view of the thugs.
Batman is the monster. You know, monsters we could do it too. There's actually the Codex of Worlds came out recently, not the particular product. I think one of them was you are a gang of thieves or a roving band of, you know, musicians, etc. So there are avenues you could go where you are the...
There are other routes you could go. I'm just saying that I don't really know that you can fairly run it in any other game that I can think of but Fiasco.
Right. I think if, in fact, you know, Scarlet Pimpernel Batman is a murder robot, that's Fiasco.
Yeah. Because, I mean, what are you going to do about that? You're not going to do anything about that. You're just going to try to be the least dead guy by the end of it.
You're going to drop your friend in front of him and run.
And the important thing is to play that completely straight. Like, this thing is, you know, beating people to a pulp, breaking arms, all of that, because it thinks that's just what vigilantes do. This sounds like fun.
I might even have, like, a collection, because most of these ships have Viv-Mild Entertainment. Maybe it has a bunch of old serials, so it's got lines.
It definitely has a bunch of old serials.
When I was studying film, we, at Ithaca, we had all of Gunsmoke just archived. So they were just, hey, you know, here's the Gunsmoke episodes, have fun. And you could walk down to, you know, batteries of computers and just watch all these bizarre kind of surreal
watch Gunsmoke, which ranges from making plenty of sense to making absolutely none because they needed an episode that week. Like most TV shows. Mm-hmm.
So that's like, it starts pulling stuff that would actually maybe make sense in reference point it's working from, but here in this moment doesn't at all.
But to a bunch of Renaissance era crooks, it makes no sense at all. It's just something beating the crap out of them. Putting several of them in the hospital and, you know, so on and so forth.
Well, and that gives you a good connection point, because here we have the wonders from the floating magic temple making it to the mainland, and all these people who dearly and desperately need a source of restoration that is not the system. Because you've got crooks who are maimed, got their eyes gouged out, like
broken jaws, permanently dislocated shoulders, ruined
all
elbows.
All these replicated medical supplies start circulating through
to the undermarket. All of this Batman type of stuff that, like, the way Batman hits people, the way Daredevil hurts people, they should not be able to, you know, ever see him again. They should just be in the hospital or dead.
What's the movie where the guy, it's a kung fu movie, where it's just him going through a warehouse of guys to get to the villain at the end?
That's the Raid, I believe.
Okay, yeah. It's just like that, where everyone is the leftover person from the Raid going to get the magical space healing technology. And then when they do, right? They see the branding on the magical healing gel. Uh-huh. It's the same branding.
What is this bullshit? Is the only possible reaction.
Not just that, but inevitably someone will start charging for that stuff. It's not going to be a free service. So eventually someone's going to start thinking there's got to be a bigger crook in town who has a strong arm, mauling everyone.
Obviously trying to muscle in on the Don's turf.
Right, so not only do you have the Bull Wizard, you have this entire coalition of the underground trying to find the person who's taking them out.
See, I don't even think you need to explore that thread except in whatever one shot the poor players have to be Batmaned in. It's fun, but like, I think you just do that as one way of illustrating the possible consequences of a robot deciding that, yeah, I'm going to do all that cool stuff they never let me do. Could go wrong.
I'm teasing these things out to the extremes to show that it doesn't take much to really start pulling a thread together. Because I think part of the reason I think we push a little bit toward the absurd here is that in order to suggest or maintain the illusion of it being a term, right? Mm-hmm. There should be fun, but also where the menace is campy. And the stuff that undercuts it is that people who are actually suffering as a consequence or infuriated by, you know, when we were talking in the previous episode, the wizard in the swamp in the tower who now has an observation deck staring into his top floor so they can watch him work his magics in the morning. You know, this guy...
I feel like that wizard knows what to do about that, to be honest.
See, and that becomes a thing, because what happens when the tourists get zorched by Swamp Wizard?
Repeatedly.
Yeah. They're going to. You know, I brought up the guy who mocked the alligators and jumped into or fell into the water with them. Mm-hmm. He got eaten because they're alligators.
Or the too many people every year who die trying to take up close photos of lions who don't like it very much.
The scariest anecdote of a guy on a safari. He got out of the truck. He sat down to take a photo and had a lion club crawl into his lap.
And then he died.
No, he didn't. Surprisingly. Because the first thing he did in that moment was realize if there's a cub, there's the mama. And she's the more threatening one usually. Mm-hmm. I'm going to move. And eventually he saw her. And she saw him and he just sat there until the cub got bored and wandered off. But I think you have moments like that where things go real and even the crew doesn't know what to do.
They're not prepared for that.
No, because it's an outside context problem, right? you know, I'm sure they have the advanced med bay for stupid injuries that occur on cruises because those happen.
Mm-hmm. And there might be a limited number of things you can do with the med bay. In fact, I think there probably are, because then one of the goals of the bridge crew end of the campaign is to keep passenger casualties to a minimum, because you really can only absorb so many, no matter how cool your medical technology is.
There's probably a limited resource of some kind, resources that are not easily replenished on
ground. On, you know, some fantasy planet.
Right. It might be you just need to get into the atmosphere enough to, you know, convert sun rays into stuff.
Which is another thing I wanted to ask, just sort of as a point of inquiry, because that sort of determines how crazy things can get. Obviously, there was an ancient wizard on this planet.
Yes.
Is this place still crawling with, you know, wizards and, you know, sorcerers and, you know, barbarians with swords and shit like that, or not so much? Has it calmed down?
So, have you read Joe Abercrombie, by any chance?
I don't think so.
In the series I'm reading right now, this is one of the things he tackles. Mm-hmm. It's an industrial era, pseudo, like industrial era mixed with Renaissance level take on a world he's been exploring for a while. And there are wizards who are, you know, centuries old and mighty powerful, you know, and got the first of the Magi. They're on the banks because for whatever reason, I haven't read the earlier series. Magic is fading in the world and complicated and also apparently involves cannibalism. So, you know, there are chances involved in high magic.
Right.
And there are stories of, there are people who've lived through, oh, Baaz blew up the city, leveled the mountain range. So when it comes to you offering you a loan, you say yes.
Right. You're like, okay, you got it. 5% interest. Sounds good, man.
Yeah. Not because he's going to your city, but because he's found that money is as powerful as magic for less work. So I don't know if it's true here that magic is faded. It doesn't feel that way. But I do think, like, you know, when you get to the level of explosives and musketry and other elements, there's stuff that threatens not the wizards per se, but their minions, right? So the savvier, more sociable ones probably find ways to work in that system, and the rest live in swamps or other, you know, places.
But the rest live in swamps.
I'm using swamps as a catch-all, but, you know, the rest are hermits. They don't know part of the way the world is going. So I do imagine, yeah, they probably have plenty of wizards in positions of power, or, you know, magical folk, let's say, in wizard in positions of power. But they probably rely on a lot of that power to do the things that they don't feel like burning the even more limited magical resources for. Even if magic is plentiful, there's probably still things you have to do, like the ritual and collect stuff, or, you know, maybe risk contact with the bull wizard's mentality. That could be it right there, right? Magic exists in plenty, but he's a nexus of it. And how do you?
He's hijacked it.
Yeah. How do you?
If you're messing with it, you're messing with him.
Right. So that becomes another, you know, axis of opportunity too. Because if the space tourists have, you know, already broken the taboo of mess with a bull wizard, well then, you know, soup's on.
All right, fine. Let's roll up our sleeves.
Right. So you get the swamp wizard who blows out the tourist in the observatory and goes, "Oh wait, he's, you know, we're letting him do whatever he wants. Fine then."
Oh, okay.
Go back to terraforming.
Right. And I think perhaps that may actually be a good answer to what the real problem is from the fantasy perspective, is they know what happens if wizards get up to stuff. They don't need that again.
Right. I think there's kind of been a detente, right? Mm-hmm. Let you putter around, do your thing, explore the stars and the universe and, you know, right, the mysteries of the deeps and all that stuff, as long as you leave us alone. Mm-hmm. They even call on you for auguries, or, you know, shake your staff around during debates to, well, we've got X many wizards on display. But it's wizards become new fundamentally. You don't want to use them. They're just there.
Wizards are there, whether you like it or not. You hope they leave you alone.
To give you a loan, whether it's magical power or money, clout, whatever. Like, if you call upon the wizards, you owe the wizards and you don't want to owe wizards, right? To borrow from Abercrombie there, regardless of the reason. Because maybe what they say is, well, you know, you could owe us these things, or their demands are unreasonable, because what they're asking for is things to, you know, if I'm going to use magic, I want a thing so that I don't suffer the consequences of touching whatever the bull wizard's ley lines are.
Who dares call upon the aid of the purple sorceress?
Bureaucrat number 42.
Okay, this is going to be $350 a month payable in installments.
You know, that would actually be the worst part if the bull wizard was just the world own shark.
No, I think this is definitely fundamentally one of these people who cannot get with the times.
Right.
In that it's an ancient disembodied wizard.
Yeah, because I remember long ago, back when we were hashing over way, I think, like, undead should be, you know, in the newer versions of role-playing games, one of the jokes became, okay, undead exist outside of the time and place they originated from, for whatever reason. So what have they lost in that regard? And I think the one we said for mummies, in that sense, you know, the ones who are buried with a whole bunch of stuff that is theirs from then want to go back to it because that's when they were awesome. So I think that
well, and also they've been in a tomb for thousands of years. They have no idea what's going on in the outside world. It's probably all really confusing and unpleasant.
Right. So let's go back to what's in the tomb because that makes sense and is safe. So yeah, in that same sentiment, you know, the wizards are also agitating, saying, no, you don't actually, the more amenable wizards or, you know, magical beings are saying, you don't actually want us to put, you know, to press on that one because they sense an agitation in the fours, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't feel like pulling on that any further because something's going to happen.
Fundamentally, if you disturb that guy, he's just going to go ahead and take you back to the days of, you know, endless towers of stone rising up from the desert to look at stars and fireballs being thrown at people and people being cursed to turn into scorpions. And nobody really wants that.
And then you get sequels about it.
It took us a lot of effort to get all that sort of thing under control the first time.
Right. And I imagine like the majority of the folk live now, even if most of that is fairy tale stories to people on the whole, there's enough evidence left behind to be like, no, that's actually the tomb of the bull wizard, right? Like that guy existed, did terrible things, you know. Evidence is left behind, even if we don't believe the majority of what happened.
Well, no, I think the wizard Illuminati, as it were, knows exactly what could happen and is like, you know, we probably just shouldn't let this happen. Let's stick to the safe stuff.
Right. And maybe they've even papered over a lot of it as part of their PR so that they don't seem as problematic, right?
Because, like, literally, I could turn that guy into a frog, but then everybody would know I turned that guy into a frog. And
then no one would trust me anymore. You know, I can't get my contract signed, my lawn mowed.
Somebody would come murder me for turning their parent into right. a frog, you know, and like it's a whole thing, man.
I can't argue what happens as a wizard turns a guy into a frog, fearing bull wizards awake, and then the AI murders the wizard.
Maybe the other wizards are going to police that, in fact.
Yes. No, that doesn't get known.
Oh, you turned a guy into a frog. Well, okay.
We're a swamp wizard.
The swamp wizard blows off a bunch of tourists and just disappears.
Just it was just a fire. It was just a big fire in the forest. That's all.
No, he just disappears. Yeah. Nobody knows what happens. The other wizards take care of it. He could be anywhere now. He's probably right. A frog.
Right, and all that gets told to the tourists is great news. The wizard tour is open for exploration. Right.
So we're sorry about that. That was an accident, and everything's fine.
there's layers upon layers of.
And that actually gives you a whole other emergent problem to have people solve. Is that sooner or later the people who have been going ahead and you know keeping magic dialed down on this planet are gonna have a problem with what's going on.
Right, because you have people with lasers and you know magical healing pads and stuff.
And they're gonna see all that and be like, well, that's nonsense.
I want to go back to sitting on the moon. Obviously at least one will want the ship. You know, there clearly some of them will end up as bull wizard minions. He's gonna
bring depends on how far you want to run this out, definitely. But like the idea that sooner or later the wizard Illuminati will become displeased with the situation is another angle you could take for a particular one shot.
Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is maybe you have the main narrative or exploration of this story, regardless of the medium, and be the space tourist, but you branch out occasionally to these other things.
You go take a look at other things like a bunch of, you know, Renaissance gang flunkies getting Batmaned. Exactly. Just to show that there are in fact consequences beyond what the tourists are experiencing. And right. Most of them are very unpleasant.
And that helps you give material to try to for the crew etc to try to hide or paper over from the tourist.
So we think probably the robot killed something along the lines of about 160 people in this one port city.
and I think to punctuate it, you end up having you know reports back to the captain who's always in his office just blotto, and more so each time as new information comes in.
No, I think the captain just gets more and more aggravated over time, with the result that the captain also eventually becomes a danger to the situation, because the captain is going to start reaching out to people like the Wizard Illuminati.
Yes, to solve this.
To try to put an end to this shit. He just doesn't want it to be his problem anymore.
Right. If they can bring back the AI, the ship can go off and they can leave and that's all done.
Right.
Ish.
So minus, obviously you know, that's the best outcome.
Right. Minus the bull wizard awake and the Illuminati deciding they, you know, it's time to do stuff again.
Right. Yeah, there are a lot of potential bad problems here. But so no, I think that's what you do is your problem is that, you know, like really though, you shouldn't be here. This is not where you thought you were. That's your problem.
And the moment, the big change there is we land on Forbidden Island.
Right.
We go start poking into things that seem like part of the show that aren't. And the locals go, oh shit.
And we begin to get some hints. And then eventually the locals show up and go, oh, this isn't good.
Yes. And then you can have all those other stuff occurring of the AI cause, you know, running amok, big and small, or, you know, there's one of them, it is just herding sheep.
There's probably a bunch of them that are doing boring things, but we don't look at those because, like we were talking about earlier, they're not really problems.
Well, and they'd be hard to notice.
Now, if one of them decides that it wants to set itself up as a Rockefeller, that's a whole other problem.
You know, I could see, like, partway through, one of the local lords gets replaced, or, you know, rulers gets replaced with the AI robot who's doing things better.
The AI robot takes down a local baron,
yep,
makes itself look like him,
mm-hmm,
and just takes over.
And run things better.
And, right. And then suddenly there's textile mills and things sprouting up over there in the barony. And this is also a problem.
Right, because really what the AI is fundamentally is an infinite supply of disruptions.
It's an infinite supply of bad ideas.
And I think, like, if you were running a game, would you let the AI robot be is the finderization of the adventuring player who just, I want to do this. Is that a good idea? Nope.
Right. What is the stupidest goddamn thing you've heard a player suggest? The AI tries it.
Because what's the risk to it?
It doesn't have any.
Yeah. You get a little bit of meta-narrative fun there, but you also get to let those things accumulate and become fires that the crew has to extinguish or negotiate or otherwise prevent. Yeah. You know, we weave into the narrative of, oh, yeah, no, this is all still part of the show.
All still part of the show. Or, yeah, like, they're trying to maintain a news blackout, even as people keep coming to the island hoping to be healed of their various horrible injuries.
Yeah. And then, of course, you've got the tourists waiting in that line, too, because they've been maimed or, you know, chewed up. Or
right, because the tourists have gone into the Forbidden Temple and been shot by the laser golems and...
It's a forbidden temple. Something awful has to be in there.
Right. I also, so other just general details I think you'll want because it'll be funny. Mm-hmm. You need some kind of extremely like highfalutin 1960s comic book explanation of how magic interacts with like a planet's atmosphere so that there's a magicosphere or something.
Yes. Dude, that's be ridiculous.
Something really, really dumb sounding that sounds like terrible pseudoscience written by, you know, some barely literate artist from Brooklyn.
Because there is a pulp element to this by its nature.
Right.
And pulp can go comic. It can go very dark. I remember I lent you H. Rider Haggard's Her, right?
Yeah, she. Yeah. She,
my bad. Yeah, she. I think there's fundamentally, you can play that where it's space jerk, you know, taking people along to meet the ancient powers and discuss, you know, like read their tombs and whatnot. Because Bullwizard probably has subsidiary minions.
I'm sure there are lots of exciting places that one could in theory go on this planet, but that's probably not where your story is going most of the time.
No, but I bring it up because there are multiple ways to play the story from the serious to the comedic to the very right. Dark.
Yes. I think I may have gotten to maximum dark with what if you're the thugs and the the game is not getting killed by Batman.
Well, because Batman's a monster.
More or less, yeah. There's not like the best thing to do it was the Darth Vader scene at the end of Rogue One.
Oh yeah, I know
where Darth Vader shows up, and for like literally the only time in Star Wars, we go, "Oh, that's why everybody's scared of Darth Vader,"
and the crew.
Right, for literally the only time on screen in Star Wars, we get to see it.
Yeah, they made it a monster movie fundamentally
because Darth Vader just goes ahead and shows up and ruins everybody because he's Darth freaking Vader.
I know I was in Mandalorian. People were angry when Luke showed up and did something similar, but I think canonically there was a stretch where that's how Luke was, right?
Well, it depends on if you're a believer in the expanded universe or not, I know, but yes.
We're not getting into that. But partly because we've already done episodes way back on Geekly Oddcast, I want to say on that. Mm-hmm. There should be a couple of those moments here and there, mm-hmm, where a tourist comes back and is maimed, and either they're maimed or traumatized or horrified. Like, there's an actual horror has been inflicted that you can't fully...
Well, what you need to do is play like a bunch of traditional Dungeons & Dragons traps straight as yes, one possible way to get there. Oh, the ceiling fell on everybody. Oh, they're all horribly mangled. Oh.
The porters just come back with, you know, pieces.
Well, we could try to dig them out, but that would take us days, so...
I also imagine, like, if you were to go fully comic, the ship has the best liability contract ever. You just sign, you know, we're not responsible for anything.
Literally anything that happens to you isn't our fault, unless it happens on the ship.
But I think if you want the crew to care, there has to be some risk involved to them. Not just on the, immediate moral and ethical, because you can't always rely upon that for characters.
Well, you got to bear in mind that, okay, sure, these are tourists, and on some level, probably everybody working on the ship hates the tourists, because that's just the nature of that kind of job, right?
Right.
But at the same time, the crew is being asked to go test and vet these things that the tourists are being allowed to do and things like that.
And also, if presuming the ship ever makes it off the planet, it comes back with half of, or, you know, a significant portion of the tourist missing. Or,
that's,
you know,
a career ender.
Yeah, with stories to tell. That
possibly also, you know, like a bunch of other things.
There's probably, you know, crimes involved. Yeah, because there may have been, you know, non-intervention clauses or other, you know, what's the Star Trek, the Prime Directive?
The Prime Directive.
Yeah, that you're not supposed to be on a certain amount, you screw things up planet side.
Well, to return to the Magickosphere idea.
Yeah.
I think you try to establish that that's why this planet has been left alone.
Because it does weird things to stuff near it.
Because it has an extremely strong Magickosphere, and these sci-fi dudes have learned over the years that messing around with that is a bad idea.
The ship is done. And his first thought is, hey,
the ship
place
is like, you know what? Screw it.
You know what's going to be the most fun? The place we have never gone.
Right.
That no one's gone. Yeah.
Right. And I think there's probably, like, you know, again, there's probably like space wizards and other things like that floating around out there. But the guys running the you know, space cruise line. Not them.
those wizards are named Engelbert Humperdinck, right? Those are your Vegas wizards.
They could be Vegas wizards. They could also, again, be, you know, the golem guy I was talking about earlier, something like that, where, yeah, okay, sure. We know that that on some planets, people get a hold of, like, a bunch of whatever this force is, and our science can defeat it, but doesn't really explain it all that well, and yada, but yada. It's not, we leave it alone.
It's too much work. It's not safe. And there's so
right,
many
that's
other
more
planets,
trouble than it's worth. Nobody will insure you if you go there.
There you go. You're not getting underwritten by the biggest, you know.
Right. Wait, this planet has magic? Oh, we can't insure that.
Half of you will come back as frogs and the other half as lizard people.
Sorry. No, your policy doesn't cover that.
I am fairly sure there's a transmogrification clause somewhere in that contract.
Act of God, interactions with the Magickosphere. It's not that these people don't understand, in a general sense, how magic works. It's that what they do understand is that everybody from a planet with a strong Magickosphere understands it way better than they do, so they should leave it alone.
Right. Their understanding of it is narrative pulp level. It's the, oh, you know, we've heard stories. But
ancient religions and hokey space magic.
Yeah. But it's also the most interesting thing, because no right. one...
Except for Balthazar the Star Igniter. He's awesome. I saw him live.
And see, and that's part of it, too. Like, the marketing and PR teams can be spinning this as, hey, this is a new exclusive, right? Mm-hmm. Never before.
I saw Balthazar the Star Igniter live in Capricorn 7. It was awesome.
You know, your space board dean would live in the same universe.
Maybe. Maybe.
That same level of...
I figured that below the, you know, lasers and adventure level of all good, you know, sci-fi universes, there are definitely like chefs and tourism agents and things just trying to get by. Otherwise, they don't make any sense, those universes. They already make little enough sense, but
they've got to have enough of the everyday built into them
right.
so that the extraordinary is the extraordinary.
Right. Exactly.
Even if the extraordinary is most of what we encounter in fiction.
Well, that's sort of the point of fiction. You're not telling the stories of something boring happening. You're telling the story of something exciting happening.
I think in a way it kind of gets us back to, you know, Bethany across the table from the Dog Watcher, or to use another example, Cold Mountain, a movie that took me 6 hours to watch, even though it was only 2.5 hours long. Because all of the conflict was internal there, and there was nothing external really to counter that. And internal conflict can be fascinating, right? But
well,
I find
it cannot be.
Yeah. You need a compelling subject to have internal conflict in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, you could tell the story entirely from the captain sitting at his desk drinking, getting reports.
And that would be, in some ways, a pretty entertaining version of that story, to tell you the truth, depending on what the reports were.
You could do a similar one for some figure of authority or of interest.
There's a great kind of running bit in, I think it's Guards Guards. It's definitely one of Pratchett's guard books in Discworld, where you actually get to experience what police reports written by the people who work for the Ankh-Morpork City Watch look like. And they are insane.
I can imagine.
I'm pretty certain it's not Guards Guards. It's the one after that, because one of them is from a dwarf constable. And it's like, high were our hearts and glad were our spirits as we set out to patrol in like saga style.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Writing fan fiction of his daily life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was very bad in the best possible way. And so, again, if the captain's getting like idiosyncratically bizarre reports, that could be a lot of fun to read.
Well, like you get space dorks starting to feed in reports too because they've run out of other people to do it. Yeah.
I, Maxwell the Incorrigible, have defeated the landing forces of the so-called rulers of this land.
Like you'd get constant, you get, you know, status, logistic reports, Maxwell reports. And all of them are grandiose to increasing levels. And then occasionally you get a little bit of survey feedback from the drones and there's just devastation in the wake.
Right. Or you just get, you know, feedback from the ordinary people on the on the luxury cruise line who are like, Maxwell got four people shot. I'm suing.
The ship has a lawyer on board, doesn't it?
Probably not. But I'm assuming that the corporate office has an entire firm of lawyers available.
Oh, okay. They may not have an actual corporate lawyer, but at least one of the people on the cruise as a tourist is a lawyer.
Yes, there's probably at least one lawyer there.
Yeah, you probably have some doctors. Like, yeah, you probably do have some professionals who can get tapped in, you know, as resources from the tourists occasionally. But that risks, you know, breaking the illusion because how exactly did they lose and end up in this particular trial? Like, the day you bring the lawyer in for the AI's execution trial, there's a problem.
Well, the day you bring in the lawyer, period, there's a problem because they're a lawyer. All right.
And they're going to want answers.
Quite apart from ordinary slamming of lawyers, exactly. Lawyers are generally very detail-oriented people.
Mm-hmm. What is that? Oh, God. Tom, Dave's brother, a while back, it's a transcript that's performed of someone asking about whether or not they'd seen a Xerox. And the person being depositioned goes back and forth about, do you mean Xerox? Yes, I mean Xerox. Do you mean photocopy? Yes, I mean photocopy. And just for like 6 minutes, undercutting the nature of what is Word as the lawyer gets increasingly agitated about.
So by what instrument precisely do the enforcement powers of the Principality of Sovereign derive, says the lawyer. And the Renaissance guys standing across from him at the table pull out their muskets.
Or, you know, the Illuminati wizard sits when the lawyer arrives to serve him papers for having incinerated tourists.
Right, and transforms them into a spider in response to a protracted inquiry.
And then the captain gets the log of, you know, Maxwell Adventures, yada, 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 and, you know, Bob Willingsworth is...
Right. I attempted to serve a deposition to Balthazar the Star Igniter and was transformed into a spider.
You know, if
3 days
still...
later, I awoke in the cellars of...
You know, mice ever since.
The wizard having informed me that he was setting me free on parole to return this message to you.
It really is just like a letter from...
You could do this as a I'm getting reports format. It would be fun if there were crazy enough reports.
Oh, yeah, you would have to. Like the game there, like narratively, that's one way to do it. The game there would be for the players to submit the reports and someone else to, you know, make decisions accordingly.
Well, the game there is that you divide into teams and they each write their own insane incident reports and then the other teams have to read them.
Yes. One team is the captain, the other team is the crew.
No. You have multiple teams of people reporting to the captain, and they each have to read the insane reports the other team has written.
Oh.
It would be a exciting game, potentially.
I think that was functionally our coda to the microscope game we ran years ago about androids that turned cannibalistic over flavors of ice cream. And eventually, the replicant screw-up, you know, cloning device fiasco would have to get kicked up back to the actual folks running the ship who go, I know. This just never happened.
Right. Didn't happen.
Right, because I think there was one ending to this, which is that it all ends in fiasco, and then the ship goes missing, it's never reported on, becomes a ghost ship of legend, you know, and the cruise line just goes, they went to the magic sphere. It says right there in the contract, don't go to the magic sphere.
They went to a planet with a measured high-intensity magicosphere, including a personal daemon. That was a mistake. All people involved in this decision have been sacked. We have created a pool of 3 billion star dollars to repay settlement claims related to this incident.
Right. You could have that coda where things just go wrong to the point where, you know...
I got a class action settlement letter the other day.
Okay.
Based on the company I worked for a long time ago having shortchanged people.
Uh-huh.
My part of the settlement was something like 36 cents.
Cost more to send that letter?
That letter is going to the families and employers of everybody who went on this cruise.
You know what it should also include? A complimentary voucher to a trip.
complimentary tickets on our newest ship, guaranteed not to experience AI madness.
And magic resistance.
Insulated using crystals harvested by the...
It goes back to, you know, the golem wizard who has been recruited as the magic expert on board.
Right. By the elves of Thangalore. And
like now all cruise ships have to have a wizard ship expert.
Have to have wizards and exorcists and...
Just an entertainer. What do I know about magic of spheres? You've got a crystal fire golem.
You're the paid expert.
Right. Like they would totally take wizards because, you know, or magic folk, regardless of whether or not their understanding of that.
Whether it makes any sense to have them around along or not. Into
galactic spheres and stuff.
Right. So you're saying on this planet, nobody's turned into a frog.
Check.
Peasants are all on board. I'm not sure the wizards are.
Oh, God. I do think regardless of anything else, there have to be comedic moments because it's just something that it's a beat that breaks whatever state you had before.
Yeah. But I think that so your fundamental conflict of NPCs here is basically between the captain who's trying to tamp down the situation.
Yeah.
And your space jerk who is not.
My time.
With the eventual result of other NPC actors coming in to presumably, but not necessarily, also try to tamp down the situation.
Mm-hmm. Save for, of course, the aforementioned bull wizard decides, oh, well then.
Oh, I see. There is a world beyond this one. Well, I shall rule it all.
Realms beyond realms. Yeah, there's totally, like, I think eventually you get to a point where everyone's on the land, the ship is the skeleton crew, the captain's on board. And, you know, there's been some weird anomalous stuff detected in the med bay. And then the monologue occurs over the ship.
Foolish beings. How dare you land upon this, the sacred dimension?
See, the captain, the only one left on the ship, just totters down to the med bay to go, okay, what's wrong with the AI this time? Has it corrupted my monologues? And just standing there is Bull Wizard in full regalia. Bow down before me, minion.
I am incarnate once more.
Just blinks and walks off. Turning back into his drink.
Okay, I know what to do about this. Just walks back to his office, activates the self-destruct, and leaves.
No. I think that would be your fiasco ending, right? Like, the bull wizard finally incarnates. Captain's the only one left aboard because everyone else is having a grand old time or, you know, caught amidst ruckus.
Doing whatever it is they're doing.
And there's way off in the distance. Boom. Blows up the bull wizard again. Ship goes up. Captain goes up.
Yeah. I knew I was waiting to use this escape pod code for a reason.
We have our Dracula 3000 ending right there. I am Dracula. Boom.
I am not letting this happen on my watch.
You know, what happens when that captain gets back to the main galactosphere then?
Could be anything.
Or just shows up, you know, there's the trial, just says wizards. Everyone goes, oh, okay. Case closed.
The captain's deposition is, an ancient wizard took over my spaceship, built himself a new body, and plotted to destroy the world.
And then conquer the known galaxies.
At that point, I activated the self-destruct. Are you certain that this represented the best interests of Galactic Cruise Lines Incorporated? Yes.
I kind of envision, too, that either he's got a little homunculus bull wizard on him or he's been possessed after this.
No, he's probably fine. This captain's been through some stuff. He's too grizzled to be bothered.
Right, he knows blowing up a ship with a wizard trapped on it will do it.
It's like, well, you remember when I defeated the armada of the hallucinatory locusts of Omicron 7?
Did you ever watch the old anime Space Battleship Yamamoto, 2000 or whatever?
No.
Or just the guy with the big fluffy beard who's seen everything?
No, that's definitely the image I had in my head, except that he doesn't care no more.
Right. Like, he's just unflinching.
Right. Okay, play inspiring monologues, see. That's the only thing that's going to get to him the entire time.
Or better yet, before, he's in the med bay, Bull Wizard's there, gives the monologue. He's finally managed to download enough of his monologues on his little wristwatch or something, fiddles around for a bit and goes, witty retort 37, press, plays, and walks off.
You'll never succeed. Alpha 4, beep, and then goes to set the self-destruct.
The bull wizard is just completely baffled by this device in front of him, rambling on and on, and, you know,
You see, evil never wins. Insert enemy name here.
Doesn't even have his name, just, you know, placeholder.
Evil never wins. Good will always triumph, because evil is silly and is being distracted by my monologue while I set the self-destruct button.
Boop, boop.
Boom.
Yeah, I kind of think that's the ending in this iteration. know, if we set up, because it's Chekhov's gun, if you set up a place for Bull Wizard to incarnate and you don't interfere with that enough or don't know that you're supposed to, it happens.
Right. At which point things are worse, because now you do not have your veil of fiction anymore. You have an,
no,
have you an ancient have... wizard trying to take over the world.
Right. And either he gets blown up in the ship and no one knows if he's in there or not.
Right.
But you do know the ship's gone.
Ship's blown up. Oh, that's a bad outcome.
Yep. Oh.
Several days later, the captain walks into your settlement. He appears perturbed. I activated the self-destruct.
Walks into the nearest inn, asks for the strongest thing they have. The innkeeper goes, you know, like has a 500-year-old bottle. You know, the innkeeper has a bit of the Bull Wizard brandy. There's got to be something like stolen from the Bull Wizard's personal collections, making the rounds forever and ever. Has even his branding on it.
Not drinking that.
It would be an Emory, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Again, the captain's not going to fall for that.
No. That's how he becomes the Bull Wizard. I know spirits.
Right, I'm not drinking that. Give me something newer. I think that would also be fun, is you can have like shady fantasy types approach the party to offer them help.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. And all the most rote ones possible.
Right.
The obvious charlatans.
No, you definitely want like central casting, like D&D bad guys to approach the party and be like, yes, I can help you.
Right, because again, those would just entirely play into. I don't know where we go from this one, because I know we had thought
of local color. Okay.
I know when Dave and I were talking about this last time, the end kind of result was he sat there and said, now I want to play this. And well, I know that's always the thing with these. Like, you lay out all the potentials for fun and then you go, great, when can I jump in?
And then, you know, 2 years later, we eventually get it off the ground and it is not as much fun as we were hoping because we've lost the essence of it.
To a certain extent, yeah. Or for the trailer, you've played out the things that would be the thing to do. Right.
But yeah, no, I think that's fun. Or, you know, again, the butler is continually having to explain to people that no, we're just going to go over here and examine these ancient ruins. It's fine.
I have a question, actually, because we know Space Jerk, as we laid out in the first one, is competent enough to usually survive, if not unscathed, then, you know, alive, right?
Right.
Is Space Butler 2?
It depends on if you're playing by anime rules or not.
Well, if it's anime rules, then Space Butler is more competent.
Space Butler is infinitely more competent than the Space Jerk and is, in fact, the reason why he appears to be succeeding.
Right. I think if you're leaning toward comedy, that's the way you'd go. But outside of that...
No, I think the obvious arc in a non, you know, anime telling of what the Space Butler does is that eventually the Space Butler quits.
Okay.
Come on, dude.
There we go. That is the answer to the third one, where the big upheaval finally happens at the end. These things were the big upheaval, is that the Space Butler finally, after the ship blows up and all this other stuff has happened, the AI has been put on trial, executed down to, you know, one or four different, you know, the butler just walks up to the bar where Space Jerk and Captain R, walks over to the M4A, takes the hit and leaves.
I don't even think it's necessarily that. I think basically what you have is that sooner or later, one way or another, the situation will come to a head, and that's fine. And your next crisis is, what happens to all the people who were left behind after it did? Like the butler who quit because trying to work for the Space Jerk became untenable.
Why'd you leave your job? I tried to kill him.
Like the one guy who did escape the Batman robot.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow.
Yeah. There has to be one. Otherwise, the legend doesn't
work. At least one has to get away, or they can't tell anybody. It's just how that's the rules.
The robot would know to let one get away.
Right, exactly. The robot would know. Otherwise, the legend will, you know.
Well, then you're just a murderer.
Like, what happens to what happens to all of the people who were caught up in this nonsense, which is now over, we think? What do they do then?
Right, because this place has irrevocably been changed. The tourists are trapped, the ones who survived.
Right.
Their means of staying safe is gone.
Right. Like, so suppose there's a successful resolution and they actually take the ship out of there. Some people are going to stay.
Sure. And again, still, Fantasyland has been changed.
Fantasyland is all fucked up. There's probably still, if he lives, a Space Jerk running around causing problems for Fantasyland.
Right. Bull Wizard is still active somehow, or the Wizard. Right.
And that's your opportunity to explore the Illuminati Wizard angle, if you wanted to. You are the agents of an ancient wizard who has decided that there's been too much crap going on lately. And your job is to go settle it down.
You know what the beginning of that next arc is? You're sitting there, you're sitting in Swamp Wizard's tower, you've just exiled Swamp Wizard or been part of the cleanup crew, and...
Or you're on the boat having gotten away from the island before the spaceship took off, or whatever.
Crawling up, heaving, bleeding, crying for help, is that one last rogue who escaped murder Batman.
Right.
and knows there's a wizard in these remote parts who will do favors, you know.
And then Isambard, the all-seeing, appears and tells you, look, things have gotten out of hand.
It's time we set things right.
You get to help me fix this, and you go, or I'll turn you into a frog.
You get to help me fix this, or you get to help me fix this.
There's no or. Isambard commands it.
Yes.
Then you get to deal with all of the other wizards who have decided to recruit their own agents to try to destabilize things yet further or otherwise create problems.
And I think probably one, like, if there's any evidence that wizards can serve as entertainers in space, at least one or two or three, not more, of the Illuminati have totally left on the ship to do it.
They've either left on the ship to do it, or God help us, they're trying to get another ship to show up so they can.
Yes. They started. Oh, that's it. They sit down at the Wizard Illuminati meeting. And one of them goes, so advertising.
Right. We need to talk about this advertising concept. I have here this most interesting gentleman I saved from the wreckage of the space vessel.
That's where Space Butler ended up.
Advertising.
Space Butler ends up working for the Wizard Illuminati.
Now, you are familiar with this term from, you know, glued on bills on the stores of inns and so forth. But let me tell you about a whole new frontier.
Really, we've just rolled back into fiasco, right?
Of commercial opportunity.
Oh, God, where then the Wizard Illuminati decides to not just take things back, like try to promise the Bull Wizard they're going to set things back to the way they were, but only as a performative show to lure more tourists in. So step one. Or tourists. Step two, imprison bull wizards. Three, get them to perform on stage.
Isambard, this next bunch of tourists is your problem. See what you can do with them. I never should have let you put me up for entertainment coordinator.
The worst thing is like the most unexpected aspects of the culture they've encountered in syncretic elements. The wizard, you know, Illuminati decides, hey, you know, if we're going to rule things, we better do it properly.
Oh, so you say there's something called a board of directors.
That sounds like us.
Hmm.
And they can never be removed except by death or maiming.
Hmm. Ah, membership is. Hmm. Mm-hmm.
I really, I do think having you reading through Abercrombie's series, that was a thought that went through his head. If wizards decided stuff was easier with money and business.
Well, what if wizards were a business is a reasonably common urban fantasy. Right.
But particularly in this, it was just the what if just we could do all the things we usually do. With the threat that we could do the things we used to do.
Right.
But, you know, mostly we just send our minions out to shake down kings for loans.
You know, sometimes you got to shake down a king.
Right. And then occasionally eat some rebels. Prove that, you know, it's good to shake for the king to be agreeable.
Right. Occasionally you blow up some ogres to remind the king why it is you don't want, he doesn't want you blowing him up. And
then you've got the survivor of the Batman AI going, it's all a screed. Everything's been, yeah.
Right. It's all a scam. None of it's real.
Shake down the kings. The robots shake down the street rats.
All the way down.
There's one AI survived. It is Batman AI. And he's found some street urchin to turn into its sidekick.
Oh, no. I don't know that I want to explore that premise. That's creepy.
You know, that's the unfortunate part with Batman. Like, you can't explore the whole Batman-Robin relationship without trying to answer some things that are problematic.
Well, I mean, you can. It's what's it? Kurt Busiek does a pretty good job with it in one of the early Astro City ones. But,
like, living together, all that weird stuff aside, simply, I'm going to take, you know, an adolescent, teach them how to not die fighting murderers.
I'm going to take an adolescent, turn them into a child soldier.
Yeah.
Dress them up in a weird costume and have them help me terrify criminals.
What the fuck?
Even if you leave all of the other dubious parts of it out, that's not okay.
No.
Yeah, one of the nice things about the Astro City thing I'm thinking of is that the kid wants it.
You know, we've been looking the wrong place to put Space Butler after he leaves Dirk the whole time.
Oh?
Space Butler ends up with Batman AI.
Well, I mean, that's certainly one route you could go. Certainly one route you could go. I'm not sure the Space Butler will be any happier with that job situation. I think it's almost inevitable that if they somehow remain on this nice magical planet afterwards, they're working for the Wizard Illuminati.
Yeah, Wizard Illuminati seems like the inevitable place. But I think it's like, you know, series of bad relationships. You keep on going through the same one again and again. You'll eventually realize, you know what? I'm going to go to the board of directors of Wizards.
Oh, yeah. The problem with all of these is the guy I've decided to work for.
He's a lunatic.
Oh, I work for crazy people every time.
I should work for crazy people who are organized.
I should work for organized crazy people or multiple crazy people. But sure, that's your potential successor problem. Alternatively, okay, you break it down and stretch things out a lot. And your first problem is, again, what are we going to do with these tourists here? And then your second problem is, okay, so now that we've got the tourists pretty well settled, unfortunately, here are the people from the mainland making this harder. And then you peel back to, well, also, it turns out the Forbidden Temple actually is forbidden for a reason. You can stretch that out a very long time.
Right, like you could, you may not have even freed Blizzard. You may have just, you know, another eye of whatever he's collected from the pile of treasures there. It happens to be Bullwizard's phylactery or something, you know.
And so now we've called in the Star Lizards, and oh, that's a fourth problem.
The Star Wizards will get you off planet, but you know.
Right, you called in the Star Lizards, which is technically a win, but now the people of this planet have to deal with the Star Lizards.
And aren't happy with you about bringing them.
No, the Star Lizards are not very nice guys.
Yeah, I think, effectively, while you start with a big upheaval in this narrative, it only ends up leading to greater ones because there's too many places for small conflicts to snowball.
Assuming that the players are very determined to settle things down and chill it out, I think it should be possible. I just think it should be unlikely given human beings.
One of the things I love about the Powered by Apocalypse engine as a storytelling device is that it helps you lay out two very important truths or tenets. One, under how to run the story rules, I'll paraphrase here, but it says everything is destructible and at risk. Your heroes can't be everywhere at once. So whatever they're not saving
doesn't get saved.
Somebody else is after.
Right.
And it really helps you for narratives where you want to amp things up and be cinematic per se. Think about how much agency and control the main characters of a story have versus the rest of the world that still goes on around them.
Right. Again, go back to the thugs being beaten up by Robot Batman. I mean, they have very little agency, to tell you the truth.
And I think that's part of what we've been trying to elucidate in this exercise is even if you take a thread and follow it and determine a beginning, middle, and end, where the big change occurs, how you reveal it, and what that leads to, it's just one set of many occurring within this arc, within this section of the world of the story. And you can, as I guess we've been doing in the episode today, you should feel willing and open to diving into those sections and pulling out pieces of it to not just tell as discrete stories, but inform and give you things to inform the major. I mean,
the bottom line is that basically problems have consequences. So if you're going to ask yourself, what is the problem here? You need eventually to answer what the consequences are.
It becomes easier sometimes if you look at the smaller things the main problem causes and see how they lead to other things in aggregate.
Sure.
So I think this has been fun. I always enjoy these endeavors. I know we talked recently about you bringing some, I guess you would call them adventure ideas to workshop and then modify accordingly.
Yes.
So in a way, this was kind of a pilot for that idea too.
It's similar to that. Absolutely. Because it's sort of the same process where you are going to pick where is this happening or what is the core feature? And then you're going to try to build around that.
Mm-hmm. And find points of interest and ways for the people who engage in the story to dive in and either save it, muck it up, or get what they want out of it.
Well, that's what we were doing today. What you do from the DM chair, which is sort of more what I had in mind to try to, you know, go into, is you go, okay, so given that, what else do I need to design?
So that I have all of the tools available to me for when they inevitably create a plan that doesn't fit anything here.
Right. You can't anticipate every single thing players will do, but you can create a fairly plausible environment in which they can do things. And the result is that ultimately all the work you did up front pays off down the line where you have to do much less work when your players do something weird.
Right. And this is as true for the games you run as the stories you tell in other media, because you can, as I think all writers do at some point, find yourselves discovering things that you sit back and go, oh, it would have been nice to know.
Right.
That sooner.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that happens to writers a lot. It's a slightly different process presenting a game, but ultimately, you know, consequences are an important thing. And also,
it's also, I think, you know, the joint aspect here is you can world build all you want. You can tease out a plot narrative all you want, but those exist outside of the characters that will live in them.
Right. And nothing will actually happen until they're involved.
Yeah. Once the characters with their motives, intents, and decisions in the moment occur, the rest of that twists around and takes a specific shape. So you can lay out truths of world, you can lay out truths of story, which I think is a lot of what we'd be doing in the exercises for about building adventures. Here's the greater narrative, here's the world in this moment, but the truths of character, the things that determine what specifically happens when those three things meet. that is the game itself. The story itself is written. Yeah.
You can't really anticipate that part from the perspective of somebody running a game anyway.
Andrew is running the Apocalypse Keys game that you suggested to us. Mm-hmm. And he had this whole big thing. Isn't that a great game? It's been a lot of fun. We've pulled the rug out from under him in interesting ways.
Well, it gets so much mileage just out of swapping the, you know, you succeed a lot dynamic of most of the Apocalypse World games to
you succeed
and it's great, or ooh, you overdid it as the possibilities.
And I found, like, you know, Hani, for instance, loves, you know, tapping the relationships and other stuff to push to 11 so that things go disastrous. And we've introduced her character as a father with memory and curse issues who found his two sons who have opinions about how that went and things that he left behind and doesn't remember to most of it. We discovered, because a lot of these narrative things talk about, you know, like they give the storyteller, the GM, moments to go, well, oh, you learn an unwelcome truth. Something gets revealed. And here's the nature or shape of the thing revealed, but not what it is, right? We did a ritual to prevent a harbinger, which is the big threats in the structure of the game, from doing something awful to us. Not the one that, you know, we're trying to contend with, but just one that my character is tied to, because it's clearly like he's related to the narrative we're in right now. And I laid out, if we want to survive this, we need to appease that thing so that it doesn't interfere in the moment we do this other thing. So we did a ritual and offered up a little death to avoid a big death, right? What's a little loss we're giving you so that we don't suffer a big one? And each of us rolled, I think, we decided to move our grass keys because we're discovering truths, right? Mm-hmm. We roll the move to discover a truth, and then either it's a really good one, something horrible happens, or, you know, something unexpected is learned, but you develop a relationship and find a thing that is true about the story that gives you leverage narratively to direct how it goes. And we rolled across the board, you know, from really disastrous to terribly. And
from disastrous to terribly. This is the entire range of outcomes here.
Part of the thing is we enjoy disastrous. So, you know, I think one person rolled success, just a pure success. And the answer there, and I guess this is why I said disastrous to terribly, was that he kept on insisting that he's not a monster. That he's not horrible or terrible if he has the potential for it like we do, the rest of the party. And this was answered to the negative, that no, you are a vessel for a god who has forms that are unknown as of yet and should not be realized. And that wasn't the disastrous one. The disastrous one was a question of how, of the truth of one of the two kids, the one who was in the bard's house when it caught on fire and, you know, the child tried dragging their mother out and she died in the fire and everything, or, you know, was horribly burned and maimed, right? And we'd had jokes offhand about, you know, like what had happened, but I had kind of teased before of like, how exactly did Benji survive that, right? And as you know, there are certain moves that allow you to say, no, death doesn't happen, right? For a cost. You either negotiate with death or you browbeat death into saying, nope, not this time, for a cost of your soul. And we burnt the bard's child to death in backstory. And then the player announced, no, death always leads to life. So this is the reason this character, the child now, is stuck in this nether realm between, you know, the living and the dead, because we finally pushed the bard off their ass to use the powers that we know they have, but it refused to acknowledge in a backstory moment to prevent their child from being burned alive, but being trapped as like a, you know, horrifying nether being stuck in the realms forever. And this would explain why they're a little mad at their father, right? But it's definitely this. Yeah. We had teased at the possibilities here, but a couple of die rolls went bad. And the GM goes, oh, and I threw out this possibility of wait. And then the bard says, oh, no, finally I use this. And it's none of that was true. None of it was anything beyond a possibility. Well, someone until functionally, because, you know, talking about player agency, character agency, we could spitball all we want as to what could have happened in this moment, but it's her character's child. So she gets to decide. And she beat us to the punch and said, nope, he died. Horribly, miserably, and I saved them anyway in backstory. And it was darkly comedic for a moment, but then as like you sat and reflected about it, really awful in terms of what that means for their narrative arc on the whole, traveling now, the three of them with us.
Yeah, that's probably not going to end well.
The other flip of that was a monkey wrench we threw at Andrew because he had a big boss fight. The other child got involved with demons.
As one does.
Became a warlock of sorts and decided that he would have a demon murder his father to get revenge for the horrors inflicted by neglect and so on. Teenagers. And so we had a big boss confrontation at the top of an evil demon tower. And Kid has a monologue. The demon has a monologue. Going to tear apart the realms, turn them all into hellscape. And but first, I'm going to summon the ancient celestial dragon trapped beneath the lake to, you know, harness, devour its power to charge up and do it. And in the middle of the monologue, while everyone was distracting, I asked if I could get the dragon's name. And he goes off and rattles, you know, celestial dragons have ridiculous names, as they should, being eternal ether beings of the originations of the universe, right? And I went, thank you very much. Opened up my magic book for forbidden stuff. And one of the roll decently options is, know the name of a thing, trap it in the book. So I described to Andrew what happens, and he goes, what? What? No, it's right there. He had this whole horrifying conflict laid out. We were going to grapple with the celestial dragon, staving off the demon trying to
murder. It was going
to
be very rough, I'm sure.
Yep, in a book.
Nope, it's in a book.
He was cracking up and speechless, fell out of his chair, could not figure out what the hell to do.
Yeah, the play-by-post game of that I was having broke up. But before it did, I had the ability to trap somebody in small talk using time manipulation until they just broke.
No.
It was one of those extremely chatty, glib NPCs, and I was like, okay, he and I are talking, and we're talking, and we're talking, and we're talking, until he runs out of energy, because I'm immortal.
Eventually, he will be a skeleton.
And I used time dilation to just make that happen within the span of about a minute. The guy talked himself out and became exhausted. It was the silliest way I've ever managed to disarm an NPC.
But it's immensely satisfying, right?
Oh, yeah, it felt good.
You have these layers and ways of interacting with the narrative that are big, but they also allow for, I think, from the ridiculous moments to, like, that fight should have been a fight, but I just noped it because it was the silliest, most in-character thing to do. And to his credit, we now have a horrifying celestial dragon trapped in a book that wants to get out.
Yeah, that's probably not ideal.
No.
Probably not ideal.
Yeah, and I've intimated that if push comes to shove, I will eat it. Because, you know, like, we've got these breaking points where we do disastrous, stupid things. And you let me have this as a character? Okay. I'm going to do a terrible thing with it. You know, like, we were joking about the robot before, but that's a pretty strong impulse. You've given me a terrible thing I can make use of to do things I could never have done before with. Okay. That poor elephant in your game. That poor stone elephant, right?
Oh, the one you threw through the illusionary floor?
Yes. No.
I really thought I was going to get one of you with that, tell you the truth.
That we bottled a wizard into a hole with.
I don't think you'd even realized it was an illusion.
No, we failed.
You were just like, we summoned the elephant over there. And I went, oh. Well, no. You do and you don't. Because that was the whole plan, is he was going to get one of you to fall into the pit and, you know, go, ha, 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 and maybe throw some spells and leave. That was my plan, anyway.
In the Academy World game we ran a while back, we finished the first arc with a monstrously long boss fight. So I had to monologue because it was a character who would. And Pablo, I credit the third way through the monologue, he goes and shanks the guy in the back. There's a little shadow body up to it. And
yeah. There was a moment in the first Stars Without Number game I played in, where it was becoming increasingly obvious that the pirates holed up on this phase asteroid were, you know, eating plant aliens and just generally very bad people.
Sure.
And so I said to the DM, so, well, he's leading me around this asteroid and, you know, telling me all of the terrible things he's done. I'm planning an execution attack because it's become clear to me that I should just kill this guy. So that's what I'm going to do. And everybody else was really shocked.
It goes back to that essential tenet of anything can change and everything's at risk.
There's no way this guy is a good guy. There's no way we're getting out of here intact if I don't kill him first. So that's what I'm going to do.
I do give Abercrombie credit because there are characters who are immensely dumb about the way they do things, and they've survived for so long in the narrative, and you keep going, all right, when is it going to happen? Right? Yeah, because
yeah.
This is coming, right? This is coming. Mm-hmm. And it's brutal, just absolute. You know, you could tell, you know, he's, I don't know if he set out to take down the archetype, but he definitely did. And you could see all of the pieces laid out. You knew it was going to happen. And fundamentally, there was no way the character being lured into the trap would not follow through.
Mm-hmm. So they did, and there were consequences.
Legs blown off, arm blown off, friend riddled through with shrapnel.
Consequences.
A good story can excite us, yes. But the best ones, fiction or not, compel, inspire, or drive us toward the hope that we need for a better life. Remember, you don't need to know everything right now, but you do need to write. So make sure to like, review, and subscribe to us at Here Be Tigers. And until next time, take life by the tail.